Now, one morning, Liz Jackson got out of bed. She did not, however, land on her feet, although maybe once she picked herself up, she did. That perhaps is too cryptic. She will explain. Liz is a creator, a speaker. She's the founder of the Disabled List, Liz Jackson. Liz, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us that story.
It's a funny story when I look back at it. It's I fell out of bed, and I say I landed in the hospital. I'd woken up to a new body, and I had been experiencing profound weakness. And for me, when I got out of the hospital, I needed eyeglasses and a cane. And the question was, why do I have so much choice with my eyeglasses when I didn't with my cane? And so it seems to have become my life's purpose to try and resolve this question.
What's the answer to that question?
I think it's a lot more complex than we realize. I think it's a matter of who we turn to for expertise. Do you value the disabled perspective? I think it's a history that stems from industrialization. It's all sorts of different things, but it's not just so simple as a product solution.
To take that back a step, and we'll come back to products, but you describe disability as a social construct. Explain that to us.
Yeah, so disability, it didn't exist before industrialization. So you would have somebody who was blind, you would have somebody with a cognitive impairment, and then maybe you'd have like me with my cane, and we'd exist in our communities. But we were never grouped together as this thing. And when industrialization rolled around, it created this expectation that bodies could perform in rote and mechanized ways. And suddenly there was a subset of bodies that couldn't perform. And this is the birth of disability. It was the determining who these bodies were and segregating them. And so we live in a post-industrialized era, and we still assume that in many ways disability means unable to contribute when it quite simply doesn't.
So bodies that were sort of outside of the productive template. That's an extraordinary sort of breakthrough in thinking, because you know, you stand here in this time and place, and that perspective is sort of lost to you. That assumption, that construct is so entrenched.
Yeah, there's two predominant models of disability. So there's the medical model, which really stems from industrialization, and it says that we are disabled by our bodies. And then there's the social model, which is the model that I ascribe to, and it states we're disabled not by our bodies, but by the world around us. And that really reframes disability as a problem with a person to it actually becomes a design problem.
That's an interesting, and you speak, and a speech of yours that I was watching, you give this really interesting example. It's just fleeting in your presentation, but you talk about this thing of making, for example, hearing aids invisible. And when you unpack why that is a design outcome, why that is a desired state, that becomes very interesting.
If you look at the top six hearing aid companies, they all market the hearing aids using the same word, which is discrete. And so it's assumed that what people want is they don't want their needs to be made visible. Mm. And what I argue is discrete is a great option, but it shouldn't be assumed. And so the thing that I'm really advocating for is choice.
Well, and choice is lacking in the things which, you know, ease the path of disabled people.
Well, yeah, very much so. But you also have to realize that one of the reasons that there is no choice is because people assume that we want to be fixed. And so solutions for us are oftentimes perceived as fixes rather than as sort of a consumer need or consumer good. And so, you know, even with the hearing aids in the United States, the hearing aid industry was actually just deregulated. And what that does is it means that a hearing aid is no longer a medical product, but a consumer product. And I have a feeling in the future it's going to turn into a hearable instead of a hearing aid.
And fixes for who? I mean, is the fix for the person with that particular need, or the fix for the people around them?
And that's the question. You know, is this all sort of a veiled attempt to normalize us and to make society more comfortable with us? You know, and I think that's the thing that I experienced in my own journey with disability is people assumed that I had I struggled with the change in my body, and it never bothered me. I didn't really care. The thing that I struggled with was the change in my identity, and those are very much two different things. I struggled with the lack of choice, that I couldn't choose.
The change in identity wasn't your choice.
Exactly. But before going into it, right, like, you know, I remember when I was in the hospital, I had this idea that I wanted to go back to school shopping for my new needs, right? Because what happens when you go back to school shopping? Well, you're away from your peers, right, for a period of time. And then you sort of have a new identity that you want to affirm through these new products when you go back to school. And that was very much the vision that I had that I wasn't able to live through. And so that was crushing for me.
What particular things did you confront in that? I mean, what were the choices you did not have?
What it boiled down to for me, it was simply the cane. And it was just a simple Google search. And what came up was a very rudimentary cane. And it has been interesting to see as brands take more of an interest in disability. I sort of joke that it, instead of just being rudimentary, it's now either rudimentary or elementary. It's as though design has forgotten that there are disabled adults. It's very focused on children.
You give the example of the collapsible wheelchair, and that's a really interesting thing because here is this piece of design which is unchanged in almost a century.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a couple interesting aspects to it. So first, what you have is you have two people that employed tubular steel, which was a new innovation in the 1930s. You had Marcel Breuer, and you have this team, and their name is lost me right now. But what happened is we look back at what Marcel Breuer did, and we say those chairs were beautiful, but because the wheelchair hasn't had a chance to change, we can't see the beauty and the innovation of this thing because it's just simply something that has not evolved, even as we as consumers do. But the other interesting aspect of it is that the collapsible wheelchair was actually the innovation of a disabled person. Mm. And so it was not actually intended to fix him at all, right? It was intended to give him access, and that's an entirely different thing. And so when you look a lot at sort of innovations right now that are sort of created for us or around us, they're actually intended to fix us. And so they therefore don't get embraced by disabled people because it's slightly off of what we want.
Another example of that is the story of the bicycle.
Yes, exactly. So in 1655, Stephen Farfler was a paraplegic, and he was a watchmaker, and he decided he wanted to make a self-propelled wheelchair, and he made the first ever self-propelled wheelchair. It's called the Monomotive Carriage. But what he didn't realize was is it actually became the precursor for the modern-day bicycle. And the thing that I've realized is that disabled people, we are the original life hackers. We are forced to cultivate a sort of intuitive creativity because we're navigating a world that isn't built for our bodies. And so our creativity, it's very ingenious and has been known to change the world.
That intuitive creativity, that smacks up against the notion of universal design.
Yeah, and I actually, you know, it's funny because I've been thinking a lot about universal design lately, and I think the thing that strikes me so much is so you have something, disability, which was created out of these ideas of normal and mass, and by the time the 1970s rolls around and design decides, okay, we're going to touch this, we're going to see if we can resolve this, and they decide that they're going to resolve the thing that was created by normal and mass by using normal and mass through universality. And it's for me, I look at how it's sort of reaffirmed a lot of the things that we struggle with, which is that there's always an exception. And so I look more to, instead of how design impacts everybody, how does it expand our notions of what's possible and our ideas of freedom?
It's possible that we're, you know, because we're stepping out of the age of mass consumption, of mass production in many respects, and we now have the tools to individualize, which is a thing that could play into that notion of intuitive, personal, very individual design.
Yeah, and I think you look at that and you match that up to the fact that because of baby boomers right now, disability is an emerging $8 trillion market. It's the size of China. In the United States, a study just came out that said 1 in 4 people are disabled. And so you have this convergence, this mass of people who are, and it's interesting too, when you think of boomers, right? Like, so the boomers invented the teenager, right? They rewrote middle age. Yes. And now they're entering their later years with this expectation of choice where there is none. And so you have this convergence of these two things, this idea of personalization and this expectation of choice through a huge group of people. And it seems inevitable that we're going to start finding really effective ways to address both disability and identity.
Disabled list, I mean, its role in that, how is that working?
Yeah, so I like sort of playing around with language, and so I realized there's only one unbranded area of sports, and it's the disabled list, and so I just figured, well, I'm going to brand it. And for me, you know, initially I had advocated for product, but what I saw was the biggest issue we're facing right now is this idea that we're recipients of design. I mean, the phrase is even designed for disability. It yields more than twice as many search results as disability design. And so I created the disabled list first just to shed light on the disabled creative people I knew of who were available to consult, simply so we can start getting invited to the table.
Yep.
But actually what I just announced today was the first cohort of a WITH fellowship. And what it is it's Design with Disability, and we're partnering creative disabled people with top design studios so that we can start carving these pathways into design for disabled people. Because it is really, you do need to teach both sides. You do need to teach disabled people that, you know, our creativity has value, and you need to teach brands that our creativity has value. And so it looks both ways.
And disabled people in a world which, you know, whizzes around them in terms of products there is a great potential there in the way that those minds approach that, with the ingenuity that they approach that world. And that's a thing which could be deeply explored.
I think we're massively untapped on every level. I think we have much to offer, and it's a matter of shedding light on that.
Did your life surprise you now?
It does. I have a mentor she's the designer of my purple cane, and she's been a force in my life. I'd met her a few years after I discovered the purple cane. And last week she told me she was proud of me. And it was one of the more meaningful moments of my life, simply because she is so impressive in her own right. And so I'm sort of filled with the fact that people in my life are very proud of the work that I'm doing, and people can also take ownership of it because they have also contributed and participated in it.
And your purple cane is quite a thing.
Yeah, it's my sidekick.
Which you carry with you on your bike, which is nice.
And yeah.
That requires a little bit of design intervention as well.
Sometimes I actually attach a GoPro to it, and I joke that I'm filming a slow action thriller.
and the big family gatherings, you can play back hours of your cane GoPro to an enthralled audience.
Yeah, it's hilarious. You know, it's for me, it's about what's funny and what's amusing. Everybody thinks disability is so serious, but like me and my disabled friends, we laugh. Like there's so much hilarious stuff, and I just wish people didn't take us, weren't so scared to laugh.
Liz, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Liz Jackson, she's a speaker, you might have caught that. She's the founder of The Disabled List. Now, if you want to see Liz in action, she's talking as part of the Antidote Festival at the Sydney Opera House. That's on tomorrow in Sydney. There's a link to that on the Blueprint page on the RN website. Blueprint here on RN.